The Healthy Insights podcast features conversations with the leading minds in the field of health and well-being. Our hope is for you to gain insights, learn something new, and discover some valuable takeaways from our fascinating group of guests. Host Jim Narum is a respected leader with over 30 years of experience in the employee health and well-being field. The Healthy Insights podcast is brought to you by Asset Health, a comprehensive health and well-being services and technology provider. Asset Health's approach is based on actively cultivating the idea that your health is your most valuable asset.
This episode's guest is Dr. Nico Pronk, president of the Health Partners Institute and chief science officer for Health Partners, based in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I've known Nico for many years and am thrilled to have him as a guest for this episode. Nico received his PhD in exercise physiology from Texas A&M and completed a postdoctoral fellowship in social and behavioral medicine from the University of Pittsburgh's Western Psychiatric Institute and Clinic. Nico is also the co-chair of Healthy People 2030, which helps define the national health promotion and disease prevention objectives for 2030. He's also a long-term adjunct professor of social and behavioral science with Harvard University's T.H. Chan School of Public Health. In addition, Nico is the chair of the Roundtable on Obesity Solutions with the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine, and recently became an affiliate professor with the University of Minnesota's School of Public Health. Nico was also a founding member and active contributor of the Health Enhancement Research Organization, also known as HERO, and the International Association of Worksite Health Promotion, also known as IAWHP. Nico has published many research papers and articles over the years and is best known for connecting research to practical applications. Nico, thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
I've known you for a lot of years, Nico, but I've learned some new things about you during the preparation for this episode. You have a very interesting life story before you got to the U.S. Tell us a little more.
Born and raised in the Netherlands, just a little south of Amsterdam, and as I got to that age where I was supposed to make a decision about whether or not to go to university, or you know, I actually got drafted. I had to go in the army, and at the time that took a while. So coming out of the army, all of a sudden found myself to be in a position where I was too old to join in a university system. And at the time in Holland, there were still lotteries for that going on anyway. So that didn't quite work out. So I spent some time in Italy on the Riviera, being a windsurfing instructor, trying to figure out what to do with my life, really. And in the process, I ended up connecting with some people that got me in touch with a college in the United States, where I ended up with a soccer scholarship. So that really got me over to the States and gave me an opportunity to go to school and figure out what I really wanted to do. Before I went into the military, I actually wanted to join the Physical Education Academy in Holland. That's what I wanted to do, become a physical education teacher. So actually, that's what I ended up enrolling in college. Came out with a health and PE degree.
As did I.
Well, you know, hey, this is a good field, right?
I mean, exactly.
But as a non-citizen, I wasn't able to actually teach in a school system. So I ended up continuing my education and ended up in Kearney, Nebraska, at Kearney State College, enrolling in a master's program for exercise science, exercise physiology, and really enjoyed that. But it also opened my eyes to research. And there was a nice research program out there Dr. Joe Donnelly in body composition and particularly underwater weighing and things like that. And I really got into that and enjoyed it. So, you know, by the end of my master's program, I ended up wanting to continue on, and we ended up going to Texas A&M, applied exercise physiology lab, very much interested in metabolism and body composition issues, kind of in the context of obesity, but it was broader than that. And so I ended up focusing in on really biochemistry and metabolism kind of context, did my dissertation. And then while I was doing my dissertation, I decided, you know, it's kind of predictable what happens with this exercise stuff. You know, every time you exercise, there's a good outcome. It's never bad. And it doesn't matter what you look at as an outcome. So so I ended up switching my postdoc from exercise physiology to behavioral medicine. I figured if it's good to exercise, then you got to get people on a treadmill, so to speak. But that's not a physiology question. That's a behavior question. So I ended up switching that way.
Thanks, Nico, for telling your story growing up in Holland and how you got to the U.S. and your educational journey along the way. I particularly like that windsurfing instructor part of your background on the Italian Riviera. I've got a great mental picture of that. But one of the things that has always struck me about you was that you grew up with a research focus and background. But over the years during your career, you've always been able to create that practical application of research to exercise physiology, to behavior modification, to health and well-being. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, I think the way I think of it is, and that's probably because of my, you know, how I got here, but I am interested in the applied work. So in the end, at the end of the day, somebody has to do something, right? So I feel that research should be in service of practice, not the other way around. And sort of that's been my, you know, my way of organizing my research portfolio, such that at the end of the day, you just increase the odds that what you're actually doing is working. So you base it on research that tells you that there is some evidence of effectiveness.
So tell me about your role as the president of the Health Partners Institute and your chief science officer role at Health Partners.
Yeah, so the Health Partners Institute work is really organized around supporting an entire system, health system, with research needs. So the institute is really embedded in the practice of the health system, and that includes the health plan, the insurance function, as well as the care delivery site. So my role is really to support all our researchers and graduate medical education and learners throughout the system to make sure that they have what they need to do their work. So so that part of the job is really an administrative function. I still do some research as well. I'm still engaged in the total worker health research and the work that we do with the Harvard Center for Work Health and Wellbeing. And projects that in and of themselves are research projects, but most of the work is really administrative to make sure that everybody else has what they need. And then my chief science officer role is really that challenge that exists in health systems and medical systems, where research tells us something, but to translate it and apply it and adapt it so that it can be brought to practice is a different story. And that's really what the role of the chief science officer is. It's to figure out, you know, how can we make sure that there are systems in place that can happen? And also that we can tell others what we have learned in our own health system and apply that to a broader conversation around the country. So this is why there are a lot of partnerships and collaborations going on with organizations like the National Academy of Sciences, Engineering and Medicine, the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, IHI, the Health Enhancement Research Organization, the International Association for Works and Health Promotion.
So one of the things, Nico, that I've noticed in my work too is the employer health and well-being field has really been evolving in recent years. So, you know, it used to be physical health focused, and that's still very important, but there seems to be a much broader view of health to include the whole person's well-being. Have you seen that too in your work?
Yeah, very much so. I actually would say that there is a paradigm shift going on with that. And it is not just the whole person, but it's the whole community. And so this shift from just focusing in on, you know, on blood pressure to really thinking about the context in which people live their lives. And it's much more powerful, I think. You know, when you ask a person, so how was your weekend? You should be able to answer that by saying, well, my blood pressure was under control. I felt pretty good that way, rather than you know, you really should be talking about, well, I had a great time with my grandkids, or, you know, that's really what we're talking about when we ask people how your weekend was. And so when I sort of put that back in the context of the work we do, it really is much about much more than blood pressure, so to speak. Yeah. Even though blood pressure is important,
right?
Yeah,
right. I agree. And both of us live here in Minnesota, where a typical response to, well, how was your weekend? And you get the response, well, fine. Yeah. And then you don't really know how to interpret that. So was that good fine, bad fine?
Yeah. But I would say that we've really pushed on that over the past, I would say, 10 years or so, to try to get that to move from just physical health to many more dimensions. And in fact, with our work on Healthy People 2030, we've really pushed that forward and have proposed a new definition for health and well-being. Most of the time, people talk about health or well-being. We've actually proposed that they probably should be connected because they are distinct, even though they are related. And so it has to do with people themselves, how people think, feel, and function, but also their social context. So it isn't just about that one person, but also their interactions with their family, their community, their society as a whole, and then how they evaluate their own life. You know, so this idea of life evaluation and life satisfaction is very important because it reflects sort of in total what's going on with people. So I think that's a major shift, a paradigm shift.
Nico, this expanded definition of health and well-being by Healthy People 2030 is significant. It doesn't seem like it's just a token name change, but has been well thought out and has an important meaning behind it as well.
It does. And it's in a sense a bridge to move from individual level kind of activities to really thinking about the upstream determinants of health. You know, a lot of people talk about social determinants of health. I would actually rather call it determinants of health. So that you can talk about social environments, physical environments, and economic environments. So those three pretty much cover the upstream determinants that we can focus in on. But it allows you to have a different conversation about what creates health and well-being, rather than telling people individually to just do better.
Right.
Setting the conditions.
Yeah. A few years ago, Nico, you wrote a paper that was published in the Journal of Occupational Environmental Medicine in February of 2016. The title of the article was The Application of Systems Science to Addressing Obesity at the Workplace, Tapping into Unexplored Potential. Talk a little bit about this article, because you were recognized and actually won an award for authorship within the journal that year as one of the most significant findings that year.
Yeah, so that does reflect, in a sense, this paradigm shift that we just talked about, to move from health to well-being. And it is to start to recognize that when you think about the systems that are driving the conditions in which people, and the context in which people live their lives, whether that is at work, at home, at the in the family context, or in the community, it is that broader way of thinking that allows you to explain much more what's happening in terms of effects and efforts to improve health and well-being. So many times in research, we try to control all the things that we're not studying. And of course, that's not possible. So what you end up with in research oftentimes is you have an error term in your prediction equation. And the error term is always very large, because it's all the stuff that you can't measure, right? So rather than continuing to focus on those methods alone, the idea of this system science approach is to say, well, if we can't control everything, why don't we just not control anything and just see what happens when you put all the pieces together, and how these factors, these many, many factors, are related to each other. And then if you identify a place to intervene in that system, what is the effect that you can observe? And that means that oftentimes intervention approaches aren't limited to one factor alone. Oftentimes when you intervene on one factor, there is a reaction in another area that even many times is unanticipated. And that's very important as well, because that may take away from the intervention effect, or it may enhance it, or it may have no effect, you know. Yeah. And of course, you know, we've continued to work on this. We've actually introduced it to Healthy People 2030 as well. And on top of that, there are quite a few projects that are going on using system sciences to find out if there is, in fact, an application for this. So we just published a small paper with the National Academy of Medicine that looks at the intersection of stigma, biased mental models, and obesity, weight bias in particular, and COVID-19. So there is an example of a complex system that has so many variables going on that, in the context of COVID-19, we see a lot of people with obesity actually having major, really poor outcomes. And on top of that, they also don't go to the clinic anymore for regular care. And it's partly because of stigma. And that was one of the examples that actually brings this to life, you know, this issue of, well, why is that then? And then when you have all those variables connected into a systems model, you can start sort of tracing the impacts and start coming up with some real plausible issues to tackle. And that may be issues either in the community, or it may be in the healthcare system itself. It may be in the way that physicians are trained or nurses are trained. It may be in the way that the rest of the community should consider stigma and discrimination issues. It may roll all the way up to structural racism issues. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes these upstream determinants are very important to address, because they have these downstream impacts, not just limited to one area alone, but it may have impacts across an entire, you know, set of factors, and that includes, in this case, obesity, but it'll also have an impact on physical activity. Yeah. or nutrition related, or sleep, or yeah.
Switching gears a little, we both live here in Minnesota, which has a four-season climate. What are things you'd like to do to stay healthy year-round for yourself personally?
Well, I first of all, I like spending time with my grandkids, and so we do, you know, make sure that we have at least, you know, 3-4 times a year an opportunity to travel down to St. Louis,
okay,
and see them. It's too bad that they're so far away, but that's the way it is. So that's always one great excuse to get a little reprieve from the cold. I think it's very important that you figure out ways to re-energize. And so besides just a regular vacation or something, I really enjoy spending time on my motorcycle. And always
just one.
Well, there may be a couple, but I like to set myself up so I can go on long rides. So we have a small group of people that gets together every now and then, and at least once a year we go for a long ride, a week or so on a motorcycle and go places. So that really is a great way for me to re-energize myself. But I like, even though it may be cold in Minnesota, I like to spend time in the winter world. You know, lots of snowshoeing, lots of cross-country skiing. You know, the mountains aren't that big in Minnesota, so cross-country skiing is a good option.
Right.
And so really enjoy that.
Well, it certainly reinforces the concept that health and well-being is more than just physical health, but also mental and emotional well-being. So your time on your motorcycle has got to be really good for that. I envy you on your annual trips. I also understand you're a gardener, and you like to do that as a part of your overall well-being.
Yeah, I do. I like to grow some hops. My son is a good beer brewer, so I send the hops down to St. Louis and it comes back in bottles. It's great.
I like that. I love that. This has been great, Nico. I really appreciate you being a guest. Finally, what would you say are your top three takeaways you would want our listeners to remember from this episode?
Yeah, good question. I would say there are a couple of things in our field that I think you sort of have to keep front mind, front of center. I think it's important to be humble, and to be kind and to express gratitude. And it's partly because most of the work, at least that I do, is happening because we have great people working in teams. So I would say that's probably one of the most important pieces, on a day-to-day basis. I would also say that a lot of the work that we're engaged in has to do with helping people improve their health, their well-being, their performance. But in order to do that, I think it's really important that you set the field to do so. You got to create the conditions in which that can happen. And that's what I meant by focusing in on the environment, the physical, the social, the economic environments. You know, we talk a lot about incentives. Well, that's an economic environmental issue, in this field. And then I would say to reiterate the health and well-being piece, organize around how people think, feel, and function. And how they do that at a personal and a social level, and helping them evaluate their life as a whole. I think that definition of health and well-being is entirely applicable to what's going on in our field. Completely applicable. So helping set the stage for that to happen is sort of demands of our field and the people in our field to step back a little bit and think broader than just physical health.
I totally agree. Thanks so much, Nico, for being a guest. This has been great. It's always nice to see you and talk to you. You have such a unique gift and ability to do research, but also apply it in a practical way that is easy to understand. Keep up the great work in the health and well-being field. Enjoy your motorcycle riding this summer, your gardening, and your grandkids. Thanks, Nico.
Well, thanks for having us, Jim. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
Thank you.
Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app or player. We also encourage you to rate this podcast. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.